Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Happy Friday. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
We're back on Friday. It's a good feeling, I think.
Calendar is appeased.
I know. I mean, the tension that I sensed in space-time all around me is now eased. I owe the various adventures that I've had this week. I'm working on the Six Colors report card, which people may remember I do every year. And I made the mistake the first year of compiling it while sitting in a lounge chair outside our rental house on Kauai. And I think every time I start it now, I think about being in Hawaii and I think, well, this is terrible. I'm not in Hawaii this time. But I persevere.
I hear that.
So the biggest challenge is that you get 30,000 words written by various people submitted. And you got to go through it. I got to go through it. It's me. Surprise, big reveal. That person is me who has to do that. And this year I decided I didn't really want to sit at my desk and like go through it all twice in a text editor and cut it up because I quote it, but I don't, you know, put in all the verbatim 30,000 words. And I didn't want to do that. So I went on a quest to find a workflow that worked for me where I could read everybody's comments, and while I was reading, sort of highlight the things that I thought were interesting. And yes, the classic way to do this would be to print it all out and get a highlighter pen.
Right.
And I didn't want to do that.
Because you like trees. You don't want to kill any trees.
I don't know if I have that much paper. So I decided I would do it on my iPad with my Apple Pencil because marking things up in like a text editor, which is normally where I work, requires then that I have like get the cursor and like mark up, oh, this part might be interesting. And that's too much fiddling for really just like, oh, that's an interesting quote. That's an interesting statement. So I thought about printing to PDF, which would be a very straightforward way of doing it. Because there are plenty of PDF markup tools. And maybe I should have done that, but I decided, like, well, what if it might be more valuable if I could then edit the document as I go while seeing the highlights? I'm not sure that's really practical, but I did search and I found that. So Microsoft Word will let you draw on the screen, but then if you edit the text, the drawings just stay where they were. So that's not good.
Nope, that's not going to do it.
Pages has this feature that Apple's talked about for a while now, where the annotations kind of follow the text. They have some sort of invisible anchoring.
It's like a smart annotation.
To text. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm using Pages. You know, it's not perfect when it comes to editing the text, but in the end, I think maybe I won't even bother. I think I'll just have my iPad and then open with the highlights and my text editor on the Mac, and I may just edit that way, which is essentially, I could have done that with a PDF. But it was an interesting kind of an experience to try and figure out what the right tool for the job was, knowing that in the end, what I really wanted was the ability to highlight a document, which, you know, again, PDF, print to PDF is probably the right way to do it. Editability seems like it's not going to work, but it was an interesting process to go through, and I do think that it shows how inefficient some of our computer workflows are. So like, as efficient, incredibly efficient as it is for me to sit at a keyboard and on a Mac or an iPad and write things and even edit things, this is a task that is different. Like I'm reading. In fact, at one point, I thought it's more like you sending me a draft of your novel and me commenting on it. And I actually thought about converting all the things to like a Kindle book and reading it on my Kindle, because that would also do the same job. It's just a different thing than what I usually do. But I have to say, it was quite a pleasurable. I'm not quite done, but it was really nice. Like, the iPad is really great to read on. It's bright. It's high resolution. And the Apple Pencil is a nice device. And I was using it like I'm using a highlighter pen in a college class or something like that. And so that's all been good. But it was just a funny moment of realizing that I did not have the right tool for the job. And I think in the end, the right tool for the job is a PDF annotation app and a printed PDF. But I didn't go that far. I just went with Pages, which is funny because I never use Pages. So it's like, oh, right, Pages does this. I remember that demo at a keynote sometime. And so that's what I ended up doing.
Now, Pages is a decent app. I don't have a lot of call to use it. But when I do use it, I'm generally fairly happy with it. It's not an app that I cries out for a lot of particular usage amongst all the various things that I do. But sometimes if I just need to write something that is not in Markdown or in Scrivener pages, it works fine.
All right. Good job. Yeah,
it's a solid job.
I'm only writing basically in BBEdit, Google Docs, or OneWriter on the iPad. That's about it.
Those are the major things I also use pretty similarly.
But yeah.
Every once in a while, I use Pages for my invoices.
Yeah, you know, I do too. That's because somebody said to me when I tweeted about using Pages, they're like, oh, Pages is like a good, simple layout tool. And my response was, yeah, I think that's what it's best at. Like, I actually, mm-hmm. as a word processor, okay, whatever. It doesn't do it for me. But as a, like, I need to print an invoice or generate a PDF that looks like it could have been printed of an invoice, which is a thing that still happens, and it's dumb, but it happens. And they have a template, and yes, all of my invoices that I do via a PDF are on that. If I have to send something official to, or like I have a sponsor for, Scott and I have a sponsor for the Star Trek Flashcast that we're doing. By the way, if you like Star Trek, it's called Vulcan Hello. It's on The Incomparable, and we talk about we're talking about the new Picard show now. But we had a sponsor for it. It's New Mexico Tea Company. They're very nice. They've sponsored other things in the past. And I realized that we had to generate an invoice for him to pay us. And, you know, that is a PDF from Pages. That is, okay. I've got an invoice template with a little Incomparable Zeppelin on it. And that all goes out that way. And Pages is good for that. Like, again, it's not what I'm looking for 99% of the time, but that's what it's, I think, excels at, is that kind of thing.
It's interesting trying to find things for specific tools. I was complaining yesterday, so I'm running this. I run a few 5Ks here and there, but I'm running one in April down at Disney World. And I was like, oh, you know what? I would like to get faster. I would like to get a better time, right? Like, it's like, I do fine on my 5Ks, but it's like, you know, I'd really like to push it a little bit and see if I can get a little bit of pace going. And so I spent a while downloading like half a dozen different like running apps.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been trying to use some of them over the past few weeks, and I've just had this never-ending frustration because it feels like none of them are designed for precisely what I'm looking to do. And part of that, the challenge there for me is I don't run outside. If I can avoid it.
only when chased, right?
Yes, exactly. If there's a bear, that's a different story. No, but I mean, part of it is there's winter here and there's snow and ice, and I just don't feel like that is
right.
Great. And secondly,
there's winter there, right?
Yeah, that's one issue. The other issue is just like my knees honestly can only take a certain amount of running outside on pavement. So I run mainly on a treadmill at the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these apps are designed along, use GPS to track your route. And it's like, guess what? I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of them do not like that you're on a treadmill and get very, like, confused about it. And so, and then moreover, like, it's fine if I'm just doing, like, you know, okay, run 2 miles, like, at this pace, you know? And I can use the workout app on the Apple Watch and if I need to like manually enter that, fine, whatever. This is a weird, incidentally, I'm not sure if this is true, but maybe somebody out there will know. So a lot of apps can create and log workouts as health data in HealthKit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure they can read from HealthKit, and this is a weird problem because sometimes I would like to say, I did a workout that I logged with my Apple Watch, but not in your app. I would like to import that workout into that third-party app and just be like, hey, I did that workout. Here's all the data you need. It's all in HealthKit. I am not sure if they can do that or not. Hmm. Or either they cannot, or nothing offers that feature, because right. I have not found it.
Because they don't want to prioritize a feature that means that you're using other apps, because they don't want you using other apps. So.
I guess. I don't know. It's very confusing. Anyways. Yeah. And then on top of that, a lot of the, and again, I don't know how much of these are technical limitations versus choices that have been made, but a lot of the integrations between the iPhone apps and the watch apps are janky. Is that a good way to put it? Some of them, like, they have watch apps, but like, what is being tracked on the watch versus what is being tracked on the phone? Do you need to start the workout from your phone or from your watch? If you start it from your phone, does it happen on your watch as well? Like, it's very confusing. Like, so for example, the Nike app, which is pretty good, but one of the issues I found with it is like it can track pretty well the treadmill stuff from the watch app, but if you start a workout on the watch app A, you can't obviously see it. The phone does not really realize, like, it thinks you're doing a workout, but it can't really track you because it thinks you're doing a distance workout. And it also really, like, wants to think that you're just working out with your watch, so it plays all the music on your watch. So if you have your happen to have your headphones paired to your phone, as I did, music starts coming out of your watch, which is not useful.
No, no.
Yeah, and not what you want in a gym either. So it's a lot of these little things where it's like, I feel like what I'm looking for is not super difficult. I mean, it's just maybe I'm looking for something in a workflow that nobody else wants. The other part of this is that one of the training things that a lot of these apps do, and that was one of the things I wanted, was to generate a training plan and say, like, look, I've got a goal. I want to hit this pace or this time, and I want you to generate a training plan for me that will help me do that. And a lot of the apps do that, which is nice. But a lot of those require what are like interval workouts, essentially, where it's like you run really hard for a little bit and then you take like a relaxed run for a little bit and then you run really hard again, etc. And a lot of them, again, want to track distance for that, like run hard for 800 meters. I'm like, I'm on a treadmill. Like, again, that may be tricky for you to determine if you are relying on GPS for that. And some of them claim they have other ways of working around it, but it's all kind of frustrating. And I really was like, I was at the gym yesterday. I must have, like, I ended up with like 3 workouts on my watch, some of which were like 2 minutes long because I kept starting and stopping things and being like, ah, no, this is not what I want. And it's like, there's nothing worse than being at the gym and trying to do this and just being like, why is this hard? Like, this seems like a thing. You have all the ingredients to do this task. You have all the technology. Why don't you work right? And maybe it's me. Maybe I am not falling into the right pigeonhole here or something for the way these apps are structured. But I feel like I'm not looking for something totally beyond the pale. I'm just trying to like log workout. So I don't know. I may go back to just using the Apple Watch workout and just sort of manually tracking what I'm doing and see how it corresponds with things, but it should be better.
Yeah, I agree. I experienced this with my sporadic couch to 5K things that I do where, you know, I run for a while and then for whatever reason I get off the pace and then I stop and then I have to start from the beginning again. Mm-hmm. You know, I've accepted this about myself, but I give it a go every now and then. And that was so hard because, you know, every app has a premise.
Yeah.
And yep. and then you throw in, you finally find an app that fits your premise, and then you throw in the Apple Watch. And I'm like, yeah, well, no, what I really want to do is the Apple Watch. And you finally find an app that fits that premise and fits that product. And then you say, what I really want to do is not have the phone and have the Apple Watch run standalone. And then you have to go back and do it again. And I finally did find a system, and I wrote about it, and it's pretty good, where I can play Overcast on my watch with my AirPods and then use this, you know, one Couch to 5K tracker. I think I ended up using an Intervals, a programmable Intervals app to do it, because the trackers are all like, they're like the Couch to 5K, but like the interval training is like you can program in your own thing, and they even come with presets to do it, to gradually ramp up your running. So I found it, but and this is the okay, I'm gonna get a little philosophical here. Like, this is why people like us and Federico especially and the guys at Mac Stories have jobs is that, like, this is hard. And the problem is there's so many of them, and unless you've got like I'm not a runner, and I'm certainly not running like you're running. So, like, I'm not qualified to do that kind of thing. So we can all, like, focus on, like, the things that we understand and can spend time on. But it does point out, and that's good because we put in the work and we can communicate it. The challenge is that it's also personal on one level, and also there's so many different options that it gets really confusing. And that is actually one of the things I love about Federico and John and Ryan and the, you know, when and what they do in Mac Stories, because it is they are app fiends, which is great, because I'm not. I'm not obsessively installing apps all the time. I'm just not. It's not a focus of mine unless I've got a problem I'm trying to solve. And they did, this is actually a little bit of a segue, they did a piece that's like Federico's must-have apps for the year. And it's like, most of them, I'm like, I'm using all those. That's great. And then there are a couple where I'm like, oh, like, I haven't heard of that. Totally missed that. And it's important, right? Because it's really confusing.
Yeah, exactly. No, there are so many things. I mean, I went through theirs as well, and I had the same thing where it's like, I am using 75% of these probably, you know, somewhere 60 to 75%, 2/3, 3/4. And then there are a handful where it's like, I know what that is, and I know I have no interest in it. Like, that's not a thing that I
sure.
do.
I don't need to count how many glasses of water I have in a
yeah,
day.
Yeah, I don't need that. I don't need timery because I don't need to track my time. That's
right.
just not a thing I'm interested in.
Yeah, and I get why they love it, but it's not for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly. It's not for me. And that's fine. Like, I know what it is. It's not for me. And then there's a handful of other small ones. I downloaded 3 or 4 things,
oh, yeah.
I think, on his list. I was just like, oh, that, all right, I don't have a use for that right now, but that is something I might want later.
Here's the one that got me. It's called, oh, now I got to look it up. This is really good podcasting. Fortunately, this is the secret podcast, and nobody will, it's not even the secret podcast anymore. It's just the Six Colors podcast.
It's no longer a secret.
Tell your friends that we do a podcast if they give us money. It's great. I would like more people to do that. It's their HomeKit app. There's a HomeKit app. That is Home Plus. Is it Home Plus? Not there are two HomeKit apps that they love, and one of
is
them
is one of them one that has like triggers that like
send yeah. So that's it.
That's cool.
Home Plus.
I had never heard of that.
Where it's like, okay, follow me here. The HomeKit automation framework includes the ability to monitor a sensor.
Yes.
And
I've complained about this when
it reaches a certain point. So when the temperature gets above or below a certain point, or the humidity gets above or below, which is actually what I want for my back bedroom. I want to monitor the humidity. It will flip on. It will do a HomeKit action. This is built into the HomeKit stuff, and the Home app doesn't do it. Just doesn't do it. So Home Plus implemented that, and they're using Apple's standard stuff to do this thing. It's like, okay, that's amazing. And also, why? Like, why is that not in the Home app? It doesn't make sense, but great. Like, great. And it's got other things. And it's, and I guess it's to Apple's credit that Apple has this API that lets third-party apps have access to all of this stuff so that you can build Home Plus and Home Run, I think, is the other one, where it's like a nicer interface on top. But and it's great. I bought it. I bought Home Plus because it's like I actually am probably going to be able to use that trigger, and that'll be great. But it also kind of blows my mind that did Apple just decide it was too complicated a UI thing? I don't know. Why is it in the API then? I don't know. Or maybe what? it was put in the API at the request of a third party. Like, because most of the reason the HomeKit API is so powerful is not because Apple wants to make third party apps like Home Plus good. It's because they're working with partners who have their own apps, right? And so maybe a partner was like, we really need this trigger. And they're like, all right, we'll put it in there, but we're not putting it in our interface. All right, okay.
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, that's a good segue, too, to the thing I wrote for Macworld this week, which is about missing integrations between some of the services.
And, we're on a roll. That's Friday. Calendar smiles upon us.
And, you know, honestly, that one was a little bit of a struggle for me because I had this idea and I was like, I just had one of those days where I was having like a mental block. I'm like, I know there are so many examples of this and I'm having trouble thinking of all of the ones that I know are out there. But there are these cases, and the home sensor thing is a great example of things where it's like, all right, like you've almost got it, right? Like you've almost got it. You've got this ingredient, just put them together and do this thing. And Apple's like, man, we don't really want to do that thing. Or, well, we haven't done that thing yet. Or what thing? You know, and so I collected a few little things where I thought there were cases where it was weird that Apple offers, you know, oh, we've got the services, we've got the hardware, we got the software. Put it together, you know, we'll get around to it someday. And yeah, I think it's funny when there are those things and you can't tell if it's something that just didn't get prioritized or if no one thought of it, that it was something that people are actually doing, or it's just, you know, a thing they don't want to do. It's hard to tell because it's a black box.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I think, you know, Apple, I've talked about this before, but like Apple's size, and it has grown, but like the chart that I did last week where it was 6 times the revenue in 2019 as 2009.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Apple's hiring philosophy has always been like really, they're really careful. It talked to anybody who's been hired by Apple, like, they'll get recruited, but then there's like an interview, and then they don't hear, and then they come back, and like it's a whole thing. And whether that process is inefficient or whether it's culturally that they're like really concerned about bringing in the right people, but the challenge is that when you look at their ambitions, they have so many places that they want to go, and I think bottom line, they don't have the people. And right. That either means you need to hire more people. You either need to give up your philosophy of hiring, or you need to give up on some of your ambitions. And Because culturally they want to control everything, this is where I get frustrated with Apple, is I feel like you either need to control it and then you're the steward of it if it's just you and you got to do a really good job, or you need to not control it and let everybody else in and let them all improve your platform for you. And we too often get in this weird in-between state where nothing is quite good enough, but Apple doesn't really want to unlock it, so they keep it locked down, but they don't advance it, and everybody gets frustrated. And this has been true of Apple to a certain degree for a long time, but the expansive growth of Apple's ambitions, not the revenue, because like the revenue is different, but it's emblematic of this. That's like the growth of Apple's ambitions. We are going to maintain multiple operating system code bases, and we're going to build all of this different hardware on these different platforms, and we're going to have these platform spanning technology, you know, APIs. We're going to do an office suite. We're going to do creative tools. We're going to do a smart home thing. Like, great, I get it, but like,
yeah,
but if you're going to do it, you got to do it.
Yeah, I started, you know, I wrote a piece about this a few years back, and I started writing something the other day that went down the same line. I couldn't exactly figure out how to codify it, but part of it is, you know, we just talked about pages, and it's like, by throwing your hat in the ring there, and by making it a free application that everybody can get access to, and by making it, you know, good enough for a lot of things, it really made it hard for competition, I feel like, in that space. You know, if you're Microsoft, sure, you're putting out Office anyway, it doesn't matter, like, you want to reach those iPad customers still, but like, if you're like, man, I got a great idea for a, you know, spreadsheet program or something, it's like, well, that's going to be a tough sell, because you've got Excel at one end of the spectrum, and you've got you've got Google Sheets and Numbers at the other end of the spectrum, and you know, there's probably not a lot of room in the middle there. And the problem is that, as good as, you know, Numbers and Pages might be, and I do use both of them for certain tasks, they feel like they don't get updated a lot. Like, there are those, like, they go in bursts. Yeah. But, like, there's a lot of things in there where it's like, you want to be the steward of that, or you want to be, you know, hey, we're providing this solution, but are we going to actually address things?
You know, in some ways, I feel like, I feel actually more positive about the iWork apps now, because it seems to me that they have small teams that just work on those now. It's like Logic and Final Cut. Like, they've got, those are dedicated. I think the bigger problem is on these kind of internal things like APIs and the operating systems, where you do get the sense that sometimes they don't have a dedicated team working on X.
Right.
They've got some engineers, and then they've got people they move from place to place. And that's why you end up with this thing just kind of doesn't get any love for a year or two, because those people are working on something else. And, you know, again, I'm not, Apple needs to decide what it wants to do to put the best foot forward. But, you know, I feel like they either need to open things up and let go of some stuff, or they need to bring on more people and actually commit to doing it. And that's the challenge with this stuff.
As if, say, they dropped a couple people off a project to do something with, say, securing backups. For example, just throwing something out off the top of my head. I was trying to roll us right into the next the next stop.
Yeah. John Gruber doing a lot of work digging up old Apple statements on this, and you know, he very much feels strongly about it, and I do too. Like, this encryption thing, we talked about it last week here, this idea that it's and I feel like we did a pretty good job, like, that they nail the premise there, which seemed to actually be borne out is that they didn't need it. They just wanted to make a point about the government did about these tech companies, and they want to kind of like needle them and threaten them, like play ball or else, even though they had already like used tools. By the way, like the Gray Key or whatever, which is like literally a startup by a guy who used to work at Apple doing security, and then he left Apple and built a device that bypasses iPhone security. I guess he's got, you know, I hope the lawyers looked at his contract, because wow. The backup thing is interesting, like that. Is this a chilling effect kind of thing where it's like we're going to keep, because it was a big deal when they did iMessage and they said this is going to be encrypted end to end,
right?
That was a big deal, but it turns out, you know, that they didn't take the next step of having at least the option to end to end encrypt iCloud backups where Apple does not keep a key,
yeah.
Which they could do. And it doesn't have to be the default. And then I think what I read is your iMessage is in the cloud, yeah. Thing. The key is backed up.
It's in the backup. If you have messages in the cloud on, your key is backed up. So if Apple, you know, needs to or is requested,
yeah.
to decrypt your backup, it would yield the key, which could then decrypt your messages. But if you don't have it on, your messages are in the backup. So it's like an additional step, but it's not something that's like, it's not a sort of end-to-end encryption of
right.
All your messages, no matter what.
The only way you could do it is if you have an encrypted backup to a local device, like
yes.
an iTunes backup,
right.
And now it's not in Catalina,
Finder backup.
And messages in the cloud is turned on, then Apple can't read or be subpoenaed to provide your
right.
messages because they don't have the backup.
The key's not kept in the
backup.
But
that's the only... Yeah. So it's not... Like, it's end-to-end encrypted, but your backups will reveal everything.
Right. And... So we did actually our episode of The Rebound this week was largely about all this stuff. And we had Guy English talking with me and John Maltz about it, because Guy knows a lot more of the technical details of some of this than we do. I think the right answer is that Apple should provide this as an option for online backups, because frankly, there's enough encrypted stuff out there already that I don't think this really moves the needle. Like it annoys the administration, which feels like it wants to have access to these things, but not for any reason that's really great. Like I use the analogy on the show of like, it's like if the FBI were really frustrated with the fact that every time they raid a house, they have to like knock the door down, and they're like, it would just be so much easier if you just all leave your doors unlocked.
Right.
We promise we'll be the only people who will take advantage of it. So it'll be fine. And it really, I mean, when you sort of dissect the logic, it's not really sensical in any way.
No.
But I think that option should be provided. Not everyone might use it. And this is the other thing, of course, we and others have talked about is this also complicates matters for Apple, because it means if you do encrypt your backups and only you have the key and you lose your key, you are out of luck.
Yeah. So some like Dropbox does this where you get a reset token or something. You
right.
have these codes that are like emergency codes, and 1Password does this. And so there are ways you could do it. I actually agree with the argument that turning it on and making it not retrievable so that you lose everything if you forget your password shouldn't be the default.
I agree. Yes.
Because people forget passwords and it's not good. And it's not just about your personal data. It's not just about access from, if you forget it, or access from law enforcement with a court order. It's also things like if you die.
Yep.
Your data is lost and they can get it back, which is it's good. It's good. But I do think that Apple needs to implement this feature as an option, right? Like I feel like it's their whole brand is
yes,
you can trust us. And when we say that it's going through our servers and it's encrypted and we can't touch it, we mean it. And you know, it can be either that we will also keep a key, but if we do, that means that if somebody asks us for the key legally, we have to give it to them. But that also includes you. But you know, if you want to just have it be that we don't get a key, here's what it means. You better write this down somewhere, put it in a safety deposit box, put it in a secure note, put it in a sticky note that goes in a drawer, that goes in a safe, that goes in a whatever, right? It's a different kind of insecurity, but we don't have it. I suppose that means that if, like, the FBI raided your house,
sure,
and they found it written down on a piece of paper, right? Like, it would be a similar thing. They get a court order, they'd go in and they'd find it. But
at that point, it requires a higher burden, take this into your own hands.
And if you care, and most people won't care, but if you care, you flip that box. And now the argument is, well, who's going to flip that box? If it's not a default, then, you know, you're not protecting people. And then the only people who know to flip it are criminals and terrorists and things like that. It's like, well, not necessarily. There are a lot of privacy minded people who like the idea of not having an employee at Apple be able to get into their stuff, because it could happen. I'm sure they've got some safeguards, but they've got the key. They can unlock your stuff. It's not just a court order. It's also a person, like, you know, a famous person who uses their iPhone and they have an iCloud backup and they're like, oh, I want to see Taylor Swift's camera roll. Like, if you're the right person at Apple and she's using an iPhone, you could do that. It's not good. It's not good. So
the same way a locksmith can get into your house, like, but those are, you know,
sure.
All it takes is one locksmith who doesn't want to adhere to the code of their profession or what have you.
And it allows Apple to say, if they do this, it allows Apple to say, look, you can put on max protection if you want. I think turning it on by default would be very hard, because the horror story of I can't get my phone back would be pretty.
It's way more common.
Huge. Like,
I think that's a far more common situation than the people who want to protect all of their data to the utmost, right? A lot of people, let's be clear, right? Like, as we're talking about Apple having the key, and we're talking about there being potential loopholes where someone could use that. But it's not as though your data is sitting on their servers unprotected. It is encrypted.
Yes.
It's just that they also have the key sitting there. It's like if you had a safe in your house and the key's in the drawer in your desk. The key's
right
there. Someone could find it and open the safe, but they still have to be in your house, and like the stuff is still in a secure location. So, you know, I think having it as an option is fine. I think the people who care that much about protecting their data, if they are determined to, say, use that encryption for nefarious purposes, right? They want to keep their plots or whatever under lock and key. There are other options for them doing that already.
They're already,
like,
using
we
some
are not
signal
stopping them
or something,
yeah,
right?
Like, you're not stopping anything by not providing that. You're just making people who want that less secure, arguably. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't think there's a strong argument. Yeah.
It's the people who have legitimate desires to do this. I will say, throwing back to a piece I wrote on Macworld a few weeks ago, backup, like iOS device backup, would be another thing that home network controlling could, where I was talking about like having the storage space actually matter. That's another feature it could offer, right? Like an Apple appliance that is then the Apple Home or whatever, that's doing all those other things that I detailed. Setting your iOS devices to back up to it, encrypted,
which is good. It has problems, right? Because then that's not an offsite backup. So
it's not. No, but again, it's choices, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, it's like I could be like making encrypted backups to my Mac. I don't want to because it takes up a ton of space, and I'm always running a little close to the line. And it's time consuming, and I have to remember to plug my phone in.
I have my iMac is using File Vault, but I have a Time Machine backup that not encrypted, right? Like, so it warns you. It's like, I'm updated. I'm backing this up to a non-encrypted volume, and my thought is, well, I get the encryption for free. I'm not really encrypting it. Like, what it does mean is that if somebody comes in here and just carries away my iMac and doesn't carry away my hard drive, they can't get my data. But if they carry away my hard drive, they will get all my data.
Well, and same issue, like, where it's like, okay. I think my Time Machine backup is encrypted, but I also have a super duper clone that runs every day, and that probably isn't. So in theory, you could just take that, and that would be, you'd be totally fine.
Yeah.
So,
beep, beep,
you know.
Beep. Just a moment.
Siri is decided
understand.
To...
Hey, Siri, you could just take that and I will be. But I could search the web for it.
Thanks, Siri. You're super useful. I don't know why my iPad, of all things, decided to trigger on that, but sure.
Hey, Siri, flip a coin.
It's heads this time.
All right. There you go. So... I think we've reached the end. Kalendar is now disfavoring us because he's saying you've gone on too long, boys.
That's right. Siri is his avatar on this plane of existence.
It could be.
We have been warned.
All right. Next week, then. You, me, back here.
Sure thing.
For, you know, for fun. Or something.
And profit.
Ooh. Excellent. Okay. Well, until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.